You're listening to Sync Beast. I'm Graham, your host, and after I hit six figures as a sync producer, I made it my mission to turn sync into a game that I could play and win year after year. With a simple creative strategy, intense production techniques, and pro-level mindsets that got me there faster than I could have ever imagined. I want to sell the farm so that you can create a profitable sync catalog, produce for sync with confidence, and actually improve your lifestyle as a sync producer. I'm here to let you know that sync is just a game, and I'm going to show you how to play it coming up. What's up, y'all? Traps. Let's talk about six producer traps you should avoid if you truly want to replace your income or experience any sort of material success in sync. Six producer traps. I want you to avoid these because these are the things that I fell into. These are the traps that I fell into numerous times, and I was too blind to see them, avoid them. And because of that, I didn't have the skill to dig myself out of those traps, which sucked. It kept me stuck for far too long. Longer than I can even afford today, right? Looking back, I see myself stuck in little tiny ways. And it's like I want to reach back in time and say, like, Graham, like, don't go down that scary hallway, even though it looks fun and adventurous. So there are six that I identified. I have them written down here. I just kind of want to blow these open for you. Six producer traps, okay? Number one, buying too much gear. Seriously. Gear acquisition syndrome is a killer. And in my experience, there are only two reasons to buy new pieces of gear or software. Either I need it for a very specific project or I'm bored. Like, those are the only two reasons. I need it for something specific, or I'm hella bored. I got some money burning a hole in my pocket. And the last thing you want to do is mix boredom with your hard-earned money. Like, you work for the money. You don't want to mix it with boredom. And again, looking back, I blew so much of it when I first came into money from sync. And now I totally regret it. I mean, I regretted it then after I figured it out. Like, oh shit, I've spent way too much money on gear. And too much is relative, obviously. But I didn't have anyone to warn me against it. I thought that I needed more plugins and more synths so that I could learn it all. I could do what the pros were doing in those YouTube tutorials or whatever. I saw that they were using a very specific plugin. I thought that plugin or that plugin suite or whatever I threw my money at would get me that sound. And it turns out I could have done it without spending all that money. It's pretty simple. So needing more gear to get a specific sound in most cases is not true. That's what I learned. Yes, there are some plugins that you need or some synths that you need that produce a very specific sound. I'm sure you can think of three. So I'm just talking about the majority of production tricks or whatever you're trying to do. And for a while there, I was just kind of buying stuff every week. Like, I would just look for a deal and grab it and then try to use it. But I think I stopped regularly buying new things around 2018 or 2019. Have I bought new gear since? Yes. Is it because I'm bored? No, it's not. I mean, I'm just smarter now. I've been around the block. I know how to manage my boredom. And part of that management has nothing to do with throwing my hard-earned money away on gear that I just don't need. I don't need at the moment. And the best way to ward off against these plug-in deals and such is to ask, will I be able to cover this cost with what I'm about to do with this plug-in? If I buy this plug-in, will using it pay for the plug-in itself? And if the answer is anything but yes, then I don't buy it. We just need to keep it simple. We need to approach buying gear and buying plugins and software from a business standpoint. Businesses don't buy shit unless it helps them earn money. And unfortunately, a lot of plugin companies, especially around Black Friday, they prey on our need to stay relevant and keep up with the Joneses on plugins. So do whatever you can to not fall into that trap. Okay? Stop buying so much gear. And if you have to buy something for a job or whatever you're doing, ask yourself, can I pay for this plugin? Will this plugin pay for itself, right? Keep it simple. If it can't, don't buy it. All right, number two, trap number two, doing everything yourself. A DIY approach to sync is a dangerous game to play. It's a trap. And if you know me, then you know that I'm all about shifting the odds into my favor as much as possible, especially when it comes to the music I make and the money that I earn from it. Like, if money is at stake, I want to be ultra sure about the creative choices and the decisions I make. I don't want to step into the arena unless I know my opponent, have a weapon, have, you know, armor, and I have the hype from the crowd. I need these things to win the battle. And that's exactly how I think about the tracks I produce for Sync. And now a big part of shifting those odds into my favor has to do with the team that I build. It's not all about me. It doesn't all come from me. I cherish my team. My executive producer is my armor. My vocalist is my weapon, and so on. That's how I think about it. Everyone on my team has their job to do because I can't do everything. And the most important thing I have to remind myself of is I can do anything, but I can't do everything. Which means, yes, I can tackle anything that's thrown at me, so long as it's one or two things at a time. I can't be everywhere at once. Anything more than that calls for a teammate to lighten the load and bring their expertise to the table. This is why I build teams. Because as soon as I invite someone else into my world to help me tackle my problems, to go to battle with me, everybody wins. And that's the exact opposite of the trap that I've found myself in way too many times. The trap of doing everything myself, or at least thinking that I can do everything myself. Okay, so stop buying so much gear and stop doing everything yourself. Number three, not finishing tracks. A huge trap. I should have put that as number one, but we needed a couple warm-ups, right? This should be on everybody's radar because everybody is a perpetrator. Everybody steps into this trap. Song starters and track ideas, like voice memos, they have a way of piling up in your phone, on your hard drive. And look, I get it. You might think that not every track is worth finishing, right? You're just getting an idea out just to get it out and see if it'll evolve into something down the road. You might not even use it. But here's why that's wrong. Before I got into Sync, I spent all my time writing for custom demos for ad spots. That was my life. And those demos were not my best work. I didn't have a ton of time to get them done. And they were super quick deadlines, you know, 72, 48, 24 hour deadlines where I had to basically make a finished product. And it was at the beginning of my career. And my quality as a producer, songwriter, composer, it just wasn't there. I just didn't have the mustard. But here's the thing. Those demo tracks that I thought were complete shit just because I was trying to get them across the finish line, Marmoset was throwing them into my Sync catalog when I didn't even know it. This was even before I understood what Sync was. I didn't even know they had a catalog. I was just in it to win it for the demos. And a lot of those bogus little demos, those demos that I hated, despised because they sounded so bad. They were such a poor representation of my talent and skill level, which, by the way, they're all up in my catalog. You can hear them. They all accounted for my first few syncs. And here's why this matters. I was literally forced to finish my track. That's it. If I hadn't finished it, it wouldn't have synced. That's what that taught me. And that entire experience of seeing these tracks that I hated earn me money changed my mind completely about the power that my music had in sync. Now, that was 10 years ago, and my catalog has improved significantly since then, which makes sense, right? But had I not been in the position to finish what I started, I would not be here talking to you today. So whatever you need to do to not step into the trap of letting tracks go unfinished and instead finish them, finish those things that are lying around, I promise you, it'll be well worth it. Whatever it takes, finishing them will be well worth it. So trap number one, buying too much gear. Trap number two, doing everything yourself. Trap number three, not finishing tracks. Number four is expecting too much of a single track. So where not finishing tracks is you're expecting too little, like, oh, this idea won't do anything. You also can't fall onto the other side of the spectrum where you're expecting too much of a single track. This one is a killer. Seriously. It makes me fucking cringe, man. I've worked with so many artists and producers and songwriters, and they all share one thing in common. They put a ton of weight onto the track that they're making in the moment. And when it comes to sync producers, that typically looks like putting a ton of time and energy into a track with the expectation that it's going to build you a deck, or that it's going to pave your driveway, or that it's going to take you on vacation. And don't get me wrong, that is a great dream to have. But you can't afford to fall into the trap of placing so much significance on one track that you lose sight of the entire game. And if you know me and my message, I believe that success in sync comes down to the quality of your music. Monetary success, material success, brand success, however you want to slice it, your music is the gatekeeper. Which means as soon as you write something that a library wants, you're in. As soon as you write something that shows up in a music search, you're in. As soon as you write something that gets pitched to brands like Google or Colgate or Exxon, you're in. Because then you have enough data to know that the thing you made actually has value. So you need to focus on the quality of your tracks. And sometimes that means focusing on one at a time. And that's okay. Too many producers worry that they're not working on enough tracks at once, as if spreading themselves out between 10 tracks at a time will get them to where they want to be, which in reality does the opposite. From my experience, spreading myself out actually slows me down. So when you focus on one track at a time, you'll have all the opportunity in the world to increase its value. Or at the very least, you'll be able to make it more valuable than the last track. But just remember to not get hung up on how world-changing and inventive and impactful that one track is. Because as soon as you put it on a pedestal, you're at risk of inviting a bunch of self-examination and criticism into the fold. You start to introduce emotion as soon as you begin to tweak and obsess, and you start thinking that your track isn't good enough, and therein lies the problem. That's the problem of this trap, expecting too much of a single track. I experienced way too much of that early on. And when I began detaching my emotions from my tracks and not putting so much stock into a single track, expecting that it's going to blow up and do huge things for me, it got easier to write for sync and come up with ideas. Because in the end, I was less precious about them. There wasn't so much pressure. Yes, I still made sure to do a kick-ass job, but at the end of the day, if something wasn't working 100%, I knew that I could always write another track. That became my mantra. I can always write another track. And that saved me years of emotional baggage and earned me thousands of dollars. And again, that's not expecting too much of a single track, okay? So if we want to replace our income with sync fees and royalties, we need to avoid these producer traps, right? Buying too much gear, doing everything ourselves, not finishing tracks, expecting too much of a single track. And trap number five is not changing lanes early enough. Now, this is only a problem if you're at the point where you have a bunch of tracks in one lane, but you aren't making the money that you think you should be. So you got a bunch of tracks in a lane, but they're just kind of sitting, they're dead, right? And changing lanes refers to the style, the genre, the angle, the niche. And it can be a small change, but significant enough to evoke a different sentiment or feeling. It's just a small adjustment. And here's what I mean by this. In 2016, I started a project called Landmarks. It's my anthemic stadium rock project. I was riding on the coattails of bands like Imagine Dragons and X-Ambassadors and Arctic Monkeys, you know, arena stuff, like bigger sounding rock, maybe with a like little bit of hip hop production influence. It's very much like a pop hip hop sound to that rock music. And that made sense given that it was 2016, right? And so the first five tracks that I wrote for Landmarks, they were all instrumental. There was no top line. There were some wordless vocals, like, whoa, you know, stuff like that. Big woes to hype the crowd, you know, but not lyrics. And they did okay. They were decent. They started getting pitches to video games. They landed some big Jeep spots. Like, I did pretty well with that project. But here's the thing. The supervisors at Marmoset started asking if I had plans to add top lines to them. And a light bulb went off in my head and told me that top lines would add value to my tracks. They said, are you going to add top lines? And I said, I could. So for the next five tracks, I'd write a full top line to accompany the badass instrumental tracks in the same style. So it was the addition of the vocals combined with a slight tweak, a slight mood change to a more burdened and cinematic angle that allowed me to settle into a pocket with Landmarks and serve the market even better. And you can totally hear this progression too. Go onto my Landmarks profile, Landmarks. Go onto my profile at Marmoset and listen through those tracks. You're going to hear a night and day difference between the more epic instrumental tracks and the fully top-lined, burdened, anthemic tracks. The messaging is tighter. The sound is tighter. The newer tracks, the ones with top lines, they sound so much more sure of themselves. And that catalog would not have done so well had I not embraced a lane change. Again, it wasn't a huge shift. Instead of epic, you know, where it started epic, we just kind of moved over to the burdened territory, right? With a little bit more grit to it. Two completely different sentiments. So make sure that when you're writing tracks and filling your catalog with a certain style, that you're always playing with things. You're always moving things around. You're moving the pieces. You're combining new ideas with old ideas. You got to make sure you're introducing unexpected elements into an otherwise expected arrangement. Like whatever you do, get used to making small changes with every track, and you're going to cover more ground stylistically and get closer to finding a pocket. Because as soon as you do, the easier it's going to get to just do it over and over again. So you have to get used to changing lanes early. And to bring it on home, trap number six is not doubling down on your most profitable opportunities. And profit in this case can mean any net positive thing you get from a connection, from the data that you have. At the top, you obviously have paid opportunities. Opportunities that get you paid in the past should get you paid in the future, is the idea. So you could bet money on it. And if you want to repeat those, you have to be able to ask, what were my highest earning relationships in the past? And how can I repeat those wins with those people? Like, who got me what, right? That's what you should be asking when basing it all on money. And below that, a layer below, you have attention opportunities. So there's paid opportunities, and then below that, there's attention opportunities, which is anything that's happened to you professionally that got attention from someone else. You've won their attention. You've won them over. So if you got certain tracks accepted into a library, that equates to attention. And doubling down on that is always a great idea. Those are two very basic examples. But I want to take you into the deeper data here. Now, I don't know if your library gives you access to statements or pitch records or anything like that. Mine does. So I have access to this data, and I've learned a lot from it, which is why I'm sharing it with you. If you're not sure if your library provides that, then you could probably just send them an email and see if it's possible. See if they'll send you like a CSV or a PDF. Now, what I've done for a very long time is I've gotten one of those PDFs from my library and actually poked through it. I love touching data and seeing how I can organize it in a way that tells me something that I can use to make more money. That's me. It might not be you, but I highly recommend you start looking at the data, okay? And the data that I look at is three things. It's plays, downloads, and syncs. The obvious one here is syncs. If a track syncs 15 times in the last year, then I know I should be writing more tracks like that. That's easy. Plays are an amazing way to see how my tracks are showing up in music searches. I'm always sorting my tracks by the highest play counts because I want to see which tracks are getting searched for the most. Again, that's enough data for me to go off of. If it's getting searched for, then it's clearly wanted or needed by someone. So I want to make more of that. And the last piece of data that is the least obvious here is downloads. My library, Marmoset, tracks the downloads of all my tracks, which is awesome because it gives me a lot of validation. Validation is what I want. If people are downloading my tracks, then it means they at least find it useful enough to try it out in their video edit. I mean, they could be downloading my tracks for any reason, really. But I have to assume that it's creatives and supervisors and video editors who are actually downloading my tracks to try in their projects. And I love this data because all that I want as a sync producer is to make music that people find useful. I want them to want it. I want them to find it, and I want to serve it to them. Because when it serves them and it serves their message, the brand, that's when I get paid. That's what my data tells me, which is exactly why I tell the same thing to you. So I want to know if the downloads are super high on a track, even if they don't sync. I want that clarity to be able to get a pulse on which tracks in my catalog are the most useful that creatives would give the time of day. I want to double down on my most profitable opportunities. And that's the last trap. So before we wrap this up, let's go through them again. Trap number one, buying too much gear. Stop it. Trap number two, doing everything yourself. Stop it. Number three, not finishing tracks. Quit. Number four, expecting too much of a single track. Stop doing that. Number five, not changing lanes early enough. Oh, that's a big one. And number six, not doubling down on your most profitable opportunities. Come on, right? These are all things that I fell into in the past, and I so wish that I didn't. And I hope by breaking them open and making them real, you can avoid them. Or at least if you fall into those traps, you don't have to stay in them for as long as I did. And that's it, y'all. I really hope you liked today's episode. I put a lot of time and energy into uncovering the tough stuff, the ugly stuff, the real stuff that not many people are willing to get into. But you are, because you're a serious and committed sync producer. And we're really trying to grow this podcast to reach more people like yourself. So if you got something out of this and you want a way to thank me, please consider leaving a 5-star review on wherever you're listening to this podcast, okay? It's the fastest, easiest way to get this material that no one else is talking about in front of more producers. It'll help them think better, produce better, and collab better, and build their catalog better, just like you. I'm posting a ton more about how to think at the highest level of sync. It's the game I play every single day, and I want to see you win. So stay hungry, and I will talk to you soon.